Welcome to Haunted Road, a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild from Aaron Mankey. Listener discretion is advised.
Of all the places I investigate, believe it or not, lighthouses may be one of the saddest. I think of the lighthouse keepers. Their very living to provide a guiding light to keep people from danger. Their job was built in routine and discipline, for to fail meant failing those at sea who so desperately depended on them for safety. Is it any wonder lighthouses are notoriously haunted? That in death, those who once manned them still feel enough of a sense of duty to return and diligently walk hundreds of steps, forever manning a beacon in the darkness? And how sad that something once so noble and important has long been replaced with technology and superpowered lights and lenses. How do these spirits feel now? What are they trying to tell us as time and time again they don't leave their posts even after they have long passed away? Perhaps the Pensacola Lighthouse can guide us to an understanding. I'm Amy Bruni, and this is Haunted Road. If you were to hike along San Carlos Beach near the Pensacola Naval Air Station and you glanced up on a dark night, you might see a brilliant beam of light in the sky. It would pulse on for 20 seconds, then flicker off again, only to light up once more after another 20 seconds. The beam comes from the 1,000-watt bulb mounted in the Pensacola Lighthouse, a beacon that's amplified by the historic, over 170-year-old Fresnel lens. It's so brilliant, you can spot it from 27 miles away. Unlike many haunted places, the Pensacola Lighthouse is still in operation today. It's not abandoned or in a state of disrepair. It also doesn't have an on-site keeper operating its machinery anymore. Its processes are all automated. The roughly 150-foot-tall tower looms over the two-story keeper's quarters. The residence, now home to historic exhibits for the public, is surrounded by balconies on each floor. It has a cheerful red roof, while the lighthouse itself is brown and white. The narrow base is a mere 30 feet in diameter, but the higher it goes, the narrower it becomes, to a scant 15 feet at the top. If you were to ascend the 177 steps up the winding spiral staircase, as I have done in the past, and I do not necessarily recommend it, you'd find an automated light system. It's completely surrounded by swirled glass that redirects and amplifies the beam, as reported by the National Park Service's website on the Fresnel lens. Outside, 16 gargoyles ring a catwalk around the lighthouse exterior. These are spouts meant to redirect rainwater from the building, but the Pensacola Lighthouse and Maritime Museum claims they also keep evil spirits at bay. Given the lighthouse's history, it's no wonder the builders were worried about malicious energies. The city of Pensacola, nestled right on the boundary between Florida and Alabama, is named after the indigenous people of the area. The town was founded in August 1559 and almost immediately destroyed, like a bad omen. According to the Pensacola Lighthouse and Maritime Museum's history page, a hurricane thrashed the community just weeks after it was founded, beginning on September 19th. The death toll hit the hundreds, and the devastation destroyed the supplies the survivors needed to ensure their town's success. After that settlement failed, nearly a century and a half passed until Spanish colonists erected Fort San Carlos de Astoria in the same place. Once again, the community only had a short time to flourish before disaster struck. Armed conflict broke out between the Spanish and the French, and later the British entered the mix too. Finally, General Andrew Jackson, who later became president, seized the city, now known as Pensacola, for the United States in 1818. When construction on the lighthouse began 6 years later, there were more bizarre disasters. The Pensacola News Journal reported that early in the building process, large numbers of highly venomous water moccasins migrated from the Gulf Coast to the construction site. The snakes would lurk in piles of bricks, attacking any worker unfortunate enough to cross their path. The serpents were even occasionally spotted on high scaffolding, and no one could explain how the snakes had climbed so high. In spite of these concerning harbingers, the lighthouse was completed and opened its doors in December of 1824. The first keeper, Jeremiah Ingraham, moved into the on-site accommodations. For 2 years, he lived there alone. Every other hour, he'd have to climb to the top of the lighthouse to operate the mechanism that kept it lit. Luckily, Jeremiah didn't remain in solitude for long. He was married in 1824, and he and his wife, Michaela, had 3 children together. She took over his keeper's work when he died, and when she passed, her son-in-law inherited the job. He also oversaw numerous renovations, including the significant improvements that were made to the lens at the top of the tower. He resigned around the time of the Civil War, and operation of the lighthouse transferred to new keepers, many of whom continued to improve the facilities and upgrade the technology. They also rebuilt the lighthouse keeper's quarters. In the midst of these improvements, the next few decades were marked by more strange natural disasters. The lighthouse was hit by lightning twice. A faulty lightning rod allowed one of these jolts to damage it during a thunderstorm, according to the lighthouse website. A few years later, a tornado further wrecked the building, and an earthquake shook the lighthouse so hard it made the bottom floor's pendulum clock stop at 9:07 p.m. All the while, occasional hurricanes raged in the Gulf of Mexico, wearing down the facilities further. But these years were marked by heartwarming good fortune, too. On January 21st, 1884, the lighthouse keeper's wife gave birth in the on-site residence. In the Pensacola News Journal, reporter Dot Brown noted that this was the first documented instance in which anyone was born within the keeper's quarters. About 20 years later, it seems the first recorded death on the property occurred. At that time, the keeper was a man named George T. Clifford. His daughter, Ellen, who went by Ella, apparently had a lot of affection for the property. She was married in the lighthouse in 1903, and she returned to the quarters when she became seriously ill in late January 1905. It's not clear what was making her sick, but many believe she suffered from complications after giving birth 5 months earlier. The 23-year-old passed on the evening of January 20th, and it's believed she breathed her last in the keeper's residence. There don't seem to have been any other deaths on the property, but the lighthouse's history is full of more eerie occurrences, like the time a flock of wild ducks passed through the lens room, damaging the equipment. And the lighthouse was the site of grave injustices, too. In 1909, the U.S. federal government forced several families to relocate off the land surrounding the lighthouse. The officials claimed this was federal territory, and the families there had no right to stay, in spite of the fact that many had dwelled and paid property taxes there for decades. The displaced residents included a widow named Winnie Hart. Her husband, Charles, was an escaped, formerly enslaved person. According to a nonprofit called Impact 100 Pensacola, he worked on construction for the lighthouse and other structures on the surrounding naval base. How ironic that his family was no longer welcome on the land he'd helped develop. In the 1930s, the Hatton family moved onto the property after the patriarch accepted a job as lighthouse keeper. Winnie Hu of the Pensacola News Journal reports that when they surveyed the keeper's quarters, they noticed a strange red stain on the floor in the second story's southeast bedroom. According to Hu, the mark was about 1 foot long, just beside the fireplace. Additionally, there were circular red dribbles throughout the room, some up to 1/4 in diameter. No one in the Hatton family knew how it got there, but they recognized what the stain was: blood. The keeper's young son, Emmett Hatton, watched his mother spend who knows how much time scrubbing the floor to remove the disturbing splotches, but her efforts were fruitless. The rusty discoloration was permanent. Who reported that at some point in the 1950s, one of the lighthouse's residents must have installed vinyl tiles to cover the bloodstains. From then, the spots went undiscovered until 1994, when renovators pulled up the tiles and revealed the old marks, still visible and unnerving roughly 40 years later. This kicked off a period of research, in which countless people tried to determine how so much blood could have spilled on the floor. two theories emerged, both of which are unsupported by the historic record. Some say the spots are the last remaining evidence of a homicide that took place in the Pensacola Lighthouse. Specifically, rumor says that the very first lighthouse keeper, Jeremiah Ingraham, was killed by his wife, Michaela. Depending on the story, she may have attacked him in a murderous frenzy because the isolation at the remote lighthouse had driven her mad. Or perhaps Jeremiah attacked her first and Michaela killed him in self-defense. Ultimately, those rumors are almost certainly idle speculation. Michaela and Jeremiah both died before the current lighthouse keeper's quarters were even built. Other murderous gossip suggests the victim was one of the keeper's anonymous assistants, but these stories date to the 1990s, well after the alleged homicide would have happened. Some argue these discolorations are from when Ella Clifford Miller, the lighthouse keeper's daughter who died in the quarters, gave birth. However, the baby wasn't born in the lighthouse, but in a hospital. So the mystery remains unsolved today. That said, when people visit the bloodstained bedroom, many report that even after all these years, it still smells like blood. Besides that, visitors to the lighthouse have reported that doors open and close by themselves, lights flicker, and bursts of cold air rush through the building even on warm days. Guests may hear disembodied voices or footsteps or knocking on the windows. It's said that numerous people have been groped while ascending the stairs, and at least one visitor felt someone pull her hair. You hear similar accounts about the keeper's quarters, plus stories about figures appearing in windows, and a lingering scent of tobacco, even when no one is smoking. Alan Brown's Ghosts of Florida's Gulf Coast says when tour guides are alone in the residence, they hear disembodied voices calling their names. One of the lighthouse's tour coordinators, Rob Booth, says there are six ghosts who haunt the Pensacola Lighthouse, but only two have a verifiable history with the building. These are Ella, the keeper's daughter, and another lighthouse keeper named Samuel Lawrence. He's said to lurk in the stairwell and at the top of the tower, grabbing visitors who ascend the steps. Local lore suggests two enslaved people named Thomas and Reynold also haunt the lighthouse grounds. Booth claims they ran away only to be recaptured and hanged near the lighthouse, but there's no record of such an execution in the area. Of course, that doesn't rule out the possibility of an unrecorded lynching. If Thomas and Reynolds' story is true, one of them may be the figure who has been spotted in the basement of the keeper's quarters. The specter, who may be a child or an adult, looks like an enslaved person and is sometimes seen hiding behind the stairs. The last two spirits Booth identified were both children, a girl named Lizzie and a boy named Joey. They both supposedly died of yellow fever in 1922, but there's no documented yellow fever outbreak that year. There was one in 1822, but this predated the construction of the lighthouse. So once more, it's challenging to verify how much of this story is real. We may never know the names of all these ghosts or how they came to be at the Pensacola Lighthouse, but that hasn't stopped the building from earning a reputation as one of the most haunted lighthouses in the United States. In his book, Ghosts of Florida's Gulf Coast, Alan Brown described a woman who's been seen walking along the catwalk at the top. When the beacon turns its brilliant light on her, it shines straight through, as though she's transparent. Guests have also seen a child and a kind elderly woman roaming through the tower, and some visitors say they've spotted the original lighthouse keeper and his wife, Jeremiah and Michaela Ingraham. And concerningly, some spectral encounters have a threatening edge to them. Earlier, I mentioned a renovation that happened in the early 1990s, which resulted in the bloodstains on the bedroom floor being uncovered. During that same project, a pair of workers found a coil of rope encircling some water pipes. As Alan Brown wrote in Ghosts of Florida's Gulf Coast, the workers tried to remove the rope, but hadn't finished when their shift ended. They left the job partially done, presumably intending to resume the next day. Instead, they returned in the morning to find the rope wasn't on the pipes anymore. It had been suspended from a light fixture in the shape of a noose. Now, as to whether this was intended as a warning, a threat, or a spectral prank, it's hard to say, but we can learn more about the spirits of the Pensacola Lighthouse by talking to people who have investigated it. I'm one of those folks, and so is my next guest, Mr. Adam Berry. All right, so I am now joined by almost a series regular here on Haunted Road, Mr. Adam Berry. Welcome to the program, Mr. Berry.
Right, and you're the best to interview. So, Amy, tell me about your experiences at the Lighthouse.
It's so funny because when I was looking for someone to interview about the Pensacola Lighthouse, I actually had a lot of trouble because it's on a military base. And so it's not really a place that people get to investigate very often. Like, it was actually a really big deal that we got to investigate there. and so, like, I found one person who had investigated it, but it had been, like, you know, 15 years ago. And I was like, well, I know Adam and I investigated it together fairly recently in 2022. And I had investigated it even before that in 2009 with Ghost Hunters. So turns out I'm the person who I know who's investigated it more than anyone. Actually, what's really funny, so I remember when we went back in 2022, I thought this was all going to happen again. But the first time we went there to investigate with Ghost Hunters, it was a way more secure of a location. When we investigated it in 2009 with Ghost Hunters, I don't know what happened to the base since then, but I remember, like, telling everybody when we went back, oh, when we go back now, I just want you to know they're going to go through everything. They're very, like, security's tight. Because in 2009, they literally went through all of our gear that we had to open all of our cases. They took dogs that went through all, like, all the cars. They had mirrors where they looked under the vehicles. And when we went back in 2022, none of that happened. Like, I don't even think they checked our ID when we went in.
Yeah, I do remember, like, driving into it and being like, oh, we're on a military base. But then it was definitely not as secure as I would have thought it was going to be. But I don't know if there's a reason. There's got to be a reason.
I think maybe it's just more open now or something. It's more open to the public. But yeah, it was just way more secure when we first went there. But regardless, it's a really cool place. You and I have investigated many lighthouses together. The one thing about this lighthouse that I talked about in the history a little bit is that there's really not a lot of verifiable history. There's a lot of, like, lore. You know, we're like, when we went to St. Augustine, you know, there were, in fact, children who died there, and there's record of that. And, like, here they see the ghosts of children, but there's zero record of that happening. So,
right.
But that doesn't mean people aren't experiencing it, of course.
Yeah, so, I mean, it looks like, what's crazy to me is it looks a lot like St. Augustine Lighthouse. You know, it's almost like a sister or a cousin. And so when you pull up to it, you're like, oh, this is going to be really creepy. Like, there's got to be something to it. And of course, you know, lighthouses in general have really great history. A lot have spooky history, but it was the only thing I could compare it to when driving up and seeing it for the first time.
Well, I don't know about you, but because we have done so many lighthouses, sometimes they kind of like meld into my memory.
Yeah.
And I'm like, was that at this lighthouse or was that at this lighthouse? But I do remember distinctly some of the things I experienced at Pensacola in particular were definitely footsteps. That lighthouse keeper had to go up and down those stairs every 2 hours, 24 hours a day.
Right.
So the original keeper there. And so I feel like he is still very much there. Like, I just, or at least that presence, like, I can't imagine he just never got a full night's sleep. Like, I could not, like, he just had to get up every 2 hours and walk all the way up those stairs and check on that light and come all the way back down.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
With buckets of oil, like buckets of heavy oil. And now here's the craziest thing. Those of you who have never investigated a lighthouse before, wear really good, sturdy shoes, especially if it's like wet outside and like humid inside the lighthouse, because this lighthouse, y'all, I've climbed to the top of a lot of things, but when I tried to climb to the top of this lighthouse with Dave, or with you specifically, and with Dave, I was wearing Converse. And these metal stairs go all the way up, and there's like a handle, but like it was slippery. So the higher that I got, the more nervous I got, and my foot kept slipping. And I was like, this is an absolute no for me. Like I sat down and was like, nope, not going any further. I'm just not going to go
any further. Well, I felt like a terrible friend because you were so mortified. Like, you were legitimately just probably the most terrified I've ever seen you.
And yeah, it's heights.
You were so afraid of falling down those stairs. And like, it was slippery. Like, it was just the condensation and everything. Like, it was dangerously slippery. And it's 177 steps, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
So like, it was like, if you fall, it's certain death, or at least you're breaking something.
And it's going to hurt. It's going to hurt because the stairs are metal. So you might you'll start to roll, but like, it is going to hurt. And I think it was my birthday too. And I was like, I want to live to another year. Okay. So I was like, I am all set with going any higher in this lighthouse. But I do remember once we got settled, right. And once I wrapped my arm around the railing so that I would not fall. I remember Dave and I were investigating and we heard, oh, Cheeto. See, Cheeto's going to talk about it. He's barking in the background.
It's okay.
Dave and I were investigating once we got settled and we heard a very strange sound coming from the bottom of the lighthouse. And it was like a voice or something. It sounded mechanical. You know, sometimes disembodied voices have that weird, mechanical
resonance.
Sound. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like a weird thing. And that's what it sounded like. And we were both like, that is very weird. And, you know, it took us off guard, but it did sound like a man. Like, it could have been a man, maybe the light keeper.
I actually remember that happening. I don't know if they showed it on the show, but I know you guys... you guys radioed over, like, what is happening? Is someone outside? And like, I went to check. There was no one out there. The door was closed.
Yeah.
And Tango's very hard on experiences too. Like, he's one of those people where he's very, very hard on evidence. And he was completely like, I don't know what's going on here. And
for sure.
That's always weird because when you're in the lighthouse and it's just you and your camera operator or whoever, you know, there's three of you. Like, and it's very clear to tell a sound is coming from somewhere else because of the way it's literally one big hollow tube.
Yep.
And so, which it can play tricks on you, but not in that sense. At all. And so, and then there's also the keeper's quarters are supposedly haunted. And so I know that Britt and I, Britt Griffith, who used to be on GH. So the first time I investigated there, that was when Steve and Dave were doing Ghost Hunters Academy. I think it was the first season. And so it was me and Britt investigating. And I know we had separated in the keeper's quarters. And we were really far away from each other, basically trying to see if we could see shadows between us. Because that's one of the most kind of famous things that happened there. And I know we heard a lot of unexplained noises in that area. I just feel like it's just not investigated that often. Like, it's one of those spots that... whatever spirits are there, they're not having investigators coming in talking to them very often, which makes me wonder if that affects the activity at all.
You know, I think so, because if you think about a light keeper, any light keeper and, the ghost associated with keeping a light, they have a job to do. And it's almost I find that sometimes you interact with spirits there that are still doing that job. And so... you come in and start asking them questions and they can get really annoyed. They're like, look, I'm busy. I got to make sure the light is lit. I got to, keep doing this job that I am supposed to do. It's like a watchman. Like, their watch is never over, in a way.
It's not. And I actually feel like that's why so many lighthouses are that haunted. I feel like there was this very diligent sense of duty, and the routine portion of it is so ingrained in that location. Like, there's probably not many jobs that just required complete and total routine like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to do things at a certain time. There's certain signals that you have to give at the exact right moments. If the weather starts to turn a certain way, you have to change the pattern of the light. And And now it's so routine that it was actually fairly easy for humans to automate that eventually, which really kind of got rid of the whole idea of a lighthouse keeper, which is really depressing and sad to me, because I think it was probably one of, it's just kind of one of the most, I don't want to say just kind of a cool old school job. Like, you're the keeper of the light. You're keeping this going, and you're just like ensuring that ships don't crash. Like, is there anything more important than that? And now we've just given that to machines.
I know. Don't mess up. Like, don't mess up, machines. I was going to say it also makes it easier for us to sort of, I guess, trigger activity, if that makes sense. Like, you know, when we did the lighthouse in Newport, right? Like, we were mm-hmm. able to play cannon fire because the cannon at the fort would trigger, you know, when the person would go up and light the light for the night, right? So I think there's routines. I think there's a set of rules, and those are easily explored by investigators to, you know, to trigger activity. I think that's a plus.
Now, do you remember, and I think so too, like, because all you have to do is kind of threaten that routine, and that can right. sometimes make things happen. Not that I like to provoke, but like, that's one instance where maybe a little bit of like, oh, we might be getting off kilter here,
could right.
instigate some activity. But I don't know if you remember this, but one of the stories there, and it's really hard, I'm surprised no one has come in and tried to really debunk this. But I saw it, and I don't remember if you saw it, but so supposedly there's a large blood stain in the keeper's quarters that cannot be cleaned.
Yes.
And so it was covered up until the mid-90s, and then they were like, there was linoleum over it. And so then they tore up the linoleum, and they found the hardwood floors beneath, and the stain is still there. And they have not been able to determine, like, they're just like, yep, it's blood. And so part of me is just like, why can't we test it? I really want to know. Like, all you need is like a cadaver dog or like some, I mean, I don't know why like they hang onto that story and don't try to prove whether it's real or not.
We had black lights. I think you and I walked around with some black lights to like see if we could see the stain at one point.
Yeah.
And
well, you can see it.
Yeah.
Like, it's there. I just don't know how it's so easy to look at it and just say, yep, it's blood, you know, because it's a really big stain and there's some spatter too.
Yeah, I think we did ask for like a testing kit, but they, when we join other like kindred spirits, like joining another show, we come up with these wild and crazy ideas and we're usually just like, hey, can you get us like a blood testing kit, please? And so I think they tried, but the kit just didn't work. It wasn't like the right, correct kit. But I remember they did go get something and they really tried to see if we could get some, like a kit to test that wood.
I know. I remember they brought me in for like the historical scene and that, you know, and that's one of those things, like, you know me, I do all my own research. And so I walked in and I was like, well, all this happened. And they're like, but we're focusing on this. And I was like, but this happened.
Yeah, but what about this?
I was like, don't you know, like on Kindred, I like find something really crazy no one knew about. And then it changes the direction of the entire case. And they're like, no.
Like, no, we're good. I'm like, okay.
That's why it's always fun to walk in to other cases because the pressure is not there.
Exactly. Exactly. We just do
kind of low key.
We do our own thing and you know, find some really good stuff. And I think the coolest thing about investigating lighthouses, or at least the ones that we've investigated, especially the Pensacola Lighthouse, is the access that we get when we're there. Like, you know, this is a historic monument. It stood for, you know, over 100 years. And they trust us to go into these spaces and to explore in the dark to try to connect with the spirits. And I think we're very lucky that we get to do that kind of thing because mostly, you know, it's tours, you see it during the day, there's ropes everywhere. But when we get to do these kind of things, those ropes come down. And so we immerse ourselves in this environment and we get to go back in time for a brief moment and really explore what it might be like to, you know, live there during like a big hurricane or when it was really active. And I think that's the best part.
Well, I try to tell groups this a lot. So like with Pensacola Lighthouse, like it's on a base and like we've done other places that are, you know, connected to like military or law enforcement, or like you need certain security clearances to do. And they're not going to trust any team with that. And that's why I think it's really important, like when you're investigating the paranormal, to kind of maintain that level of integrity where places like that will feel good about bringing you in because they know that you're going to do justice to the history and they know you're going to do justice to the activity and to their ghosts. And that's important. I think that's why we get called into so many, you know, like we get called into libraries, we get called into schools, we get called obviously into military bases. And I don't think that happens for a lot of other paranormal shows, but I think paranormal teams in particular, you can formulate that kind of reputation as a team and get called into those places. You don't need a TV show to do it. So that's one of the many reasons why we try to kind of be on the level at all times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, our reputation precedes us. Thank God.
Yeah. Thank God. Well, I know they've seen an apparition of a woman there, which they say is that girl who died. She didn't actually, I don't believe she died on the property, or she might have died on the property, but she had a very strong connection to it. Like she specifically came back to die there, basically. She gave birth to her baby and then never quite recovered from that. And then 5 months later died on the property.
Yeah.
And so she's one of the only like kind of deaths there. There was a keeper who died while they were still serving as a lighthouse keeper. So now there's a siren going by.
You know, it's the way of it.
We're living way back away from the road. It's very loud here today. I wanted to do this in person, but A, we never got a chance. And B,
yeah, it was busy this weekend.
I did not have a second microphone to do it. So, okay. So let me get back to that kind of thought there. I forgot where I was going with it. So they have seen this apparition of a woman that might have been connected to that death, but like I did not see anything like that. I didn't really see anything visual. Definitely heard sounds. Like you had that crazy sound in the lighthouse. I absolutely heard footsteps. And so there are definitely things going on, but I didn't get the vibe that it was something like either A, aggressive, or B, like really trying to get anyone's attention. Like it just seemed very much like it just sort of existed.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it was almost like, again, they were going about their business. They were sort of, you know, keeping the light, watching what we were doing closely to be like, Who are these people and why are they in the space? But it was almost like they were just going, they were doing their thing. And we were sort of there witnessing them continuing the tradition of the lighthouse. And it didn't feel like, it didn't feel really aggressive or scary by any means.
Now, one of the weird things that I don't think we talked about much when we went there with GH is that during the building of the lighthouse and just like kind of over the years, it kept being affected by like weird natural disasters. Like it was struck by lightning at one point. But the weirdest one, which I wanted to tell you because I wanted to see how you feel about it, is that while they were building it, there was this like freak occurrence where all of these snakes, like these, I think they were even poisonous snakes, like traveled across the water and all came and started nesting in the construction site. And so like thousands of them. So as they were trying to like build, they would like fall down on the workers and stuff.
No, no, that is Satan. That is a demonic entity. That is, get out of my, like nobody needs snakes, snakes on an investigation. That's like work. That's terrible.
I know. I was just envisioning it. Like these poor people like trying to build and go about their day. And it's like infested with snakes. And it was just like some weird fluke enough that like the newspaper reported on it, that all of these snakes had just come up out of the water and made their home in the construction zone where all of these men were working.
See, I don't know. That's so weird. I mean, obviously, it's probably just a coincidence and not paranormal. But like back then, I feel like, or at any point, you could take that as a sign, as an omen, to be like, do not, like, stop doing what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? Like it could just throw people off pretty bad.
Well, that was it. That was one of the many things like that where people were like, is this place cursed? Like these kinds of things keep happening here. Like what's going on? So I just, it just gave me, it just kind of made me feel like
you know, I got the like goosebumps. Yeah. I was like, that
would you rather
terrible.
Have like, would you rather have like that or like a bunch of mice and rats?
Oh, probably the snakes. Because mice and rats can give you diseases.
Like, well, snakes can bite you.
Yeah, but only when provoked.
That's true. Just leave them alone. Rats just come out of nowhere and you away.
I can like smell one mouse. I can't even imagine like an infestation. Like, no.
Ew.
No.
Especially when they die in the wall and you can't find them. And
I
you're like, well,
had
there
that
goes
happen,
that.
Thank God. But I can smell a mouse from a mile away. It's my little, my weird nose. So ew. Gross. I know.
You could
that's
go paranoid.
That's my other paranoid. That's actually, I actually sniff out ghosts. I don't know if you knew this. That's why I have so many experiences. I can smell ghosts too.
Yeah. Your fallback in your in your life should be like a rodent. Like, you know, where you go in and like track. Yep. You got mice. You got mice.
That's my plan B or ghost sniffer. Yeah. I'm going to write a book called Ghost Sniffer.
Ghost. Yeah. You should make, that's what you, fragrance is next. Fragrance. Just do fragrances.
Okay. And this is usually when that's our cue that we're done speaking. we have done this.
Ran it. Yeah.
But before we go, what do you want to talk? I know your book is out and like release now, going strong. What else is going on in the world of Adam Berry that the world needs to know
about?
Oh
my God. Well, the book is out. You can buy it wherever books are sold. And what else is happening? Well, I don't know when is this airing?
This will be probably in December, actually.
December. Okay. Well, we're, you know, I have a book signing with Steve Gonzalez in December. And Ben and I are doing a virtual cocktail party in December that people can join. You know, it's very like staying at home, making bread and soups and getting all fat and sassy.
I love doing these a few weeks in advance because it's like we're seeing into the future. So let's envision what we'll be doing in December. I envision I will be looking at my beautiful Christmas tree and eating a lot of cookies and snuggling up, and hopefully it will be snowing because it's only okay if it snows before Christmas. After is terrible. All right. So, well, thank you, Mr. Berry. I really appreciate you taking the time. And
you're
welcome. I'm sure I will see you very soon, but good luck with everything. And yeah, I guess that's it. I guess we need to get back. Let's go to the Pensacola Lighthouse right now because I guarantee it's warmer there.
Yeah, let's go now.
Okay. All right. Bye. Throughout history, lighthouses have served two purposes. They keep ships safe and warn them of danger. Pensacola and its lighthouse have long histories full of tragedy and ominous portents. Between the hurricane and the venomous snakes and the lightning strikes, the structure seems almost synonymous with disaster. If there's any lesson to take from this haunted tower and the quarters attached, perhaps it's that we should all take care. Like a ship navigating through dark water, you can never know for sure what risk lies ahead. I'm Amy Bruni, and this was Haunted Road. Are you tired of the same old vacation destinations and cookie-cutter experiences? Do you crave a sense of mystery, wonder, and adventure that can't be found in ordinary travel brochures? Do you listen to this podcast and think, I'd like to visit that spooky place? Well, that's why I started Strange Escapes, a paranormal-based travel company that takes you to some of the most haunted locations in the world. Frankly, it's my excuse to combine all of my favorite things, which is ghosts, beautiful hotels, food and wine, and other weirdos like me, to be honest. If that sounds right up your alley and you want to learn more, then visit strangeescapes.travel and hopefully you can join us sometime. Also, to keep up on all of my upcoming projects and appearances, head to amybruni.com. I have some really great things in the works and I don't want you to miss it. Thanks, Haunted Roadies. Haunted Road is hosted and written by me, Amy Bruni, with additional research by Cassandra De Alba. This show is edited and produced by Rima El-Khayali, with supervising producer Josh Thane and executive producers Aaron Menke, Alex Williams, and Matt Frederick. Haunted Road is a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild from Aaron Menke. Learn more about this show over at grimandmild.com. And for more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.